What the fuck is up, everyone? Welcome back to the What the Fuck Is Up podcast. My name is Alyssa, and I'm joined today by my other co-host, Taryn.
Hello.
And B.
Hi.
This is the 1,000,000th attempt at recording this episode. We've been trying to do this for 2 weeks.
Literally.
And we have got nowhere. We literally started recording it on Sunday morning, and then Taryn had to rush off to work, and we were like, sick, we'll do it after work when she's finished work. And then what happened after that?
Thunderstorms.
We came back late anyway, but then we started to kind of record my bit, and then B's internet fucked up, and we were just like, we're doing Tuesday when we're all free, and we all want to deal with
it. B's internet was like, you're not doing the podcast today, you don't need to do it today.
And then before that, it was thunderstorms. And then after that, it was my power cuts.
It's just been a nightmare, guys. We're really sorry.
Literally. They don't need another episode. Just stop.
Oh, God. It's not gone very well at all. No. But finally, we're here.
Yeah.
Trying it again. I swear to God, if this one fails, I'm quitting.
Oh. Okay, I'm just
going to
quit the podcast.
Like, don't quit so easily. Don't let them defeat you.
I can't help it, B. It's just your internet's upsetting me.
Don't let it defeat you. You've got to win this.
Get into blaming B, then you're like, no, B, it's your fucking
fault. I did see that.
You can't fucking see it.
Apparently, I can see it now.
Jesus Christ. So how have we been, anyway?
Mentally, physically, emotionally exhausted.
I love that.
Oh, I feel that.
Everyone's like, preach it, sister.
Literally.
But then you start your new job tomorrow.
I do indeed.
Mm-hmm.
Very excited.
Are you nervous?
I'm not really. I don't think I'm nervous though. I don't know. I think I stopped getting, because I used to have the worst anxiety ever, and I'm not sure why. I still get like nervous sometimes, and I still like overthink things, but for the most part, stuff that should make me nervous, like starting a new job, I'm just there like, yeah, it's cool, whatever, just completely chill about it. Like, it's quite different. I've never actually done anything like this before, so it's nothing like being in the kitchen. And I think I should be like really nervous, like, oh my god, what if I fuck up, what if I hurt somebody, blah blah blah, but my brain's just going like, yeah, you'll be fine, don't worry about it.
I think you're gonna do great.
No. Fucking hope so.
I think you will.
You can fail.
You've got the right attitude, you know, and like your personality is like perfect for that role.
Yeah.
I think you'll smash it.
Oh, thank you, B.
Don't need to thank me, it's only the truth.
Alyssa, your turn. B, set the bar now.
Jesus Christ. Yay.
Wow!
What was that? Yay!
Friendship, and that's all I get.
I said I was proud of you earlier. Oh god, my voice is going. I said I was proud of you earlier.
You did.
So nice. Nobody's ever said that to me before.
Wow. Big rip. Do you know what you're going to be doing at work tomorrow for your first day?
It's just shadow shifts mostly, but I get paid for them, so it's all good. So basically, I do like home visits, and it's really cool. They've got like a really awesome app that they use. So instead of like paperwork, you can like sign in and out of each residence with a QR code. And like the app gives you everything that you need to know, like where you've got to go, what time you've got to be there, how long, and it gives like a daily checklist of stuff. It's really awesome.
That's good, that is.
Yeah. My first visit tomorrow is 7:15. So the girl I'm shadowing is going to pick me up at 7. So that's 7:15 a.m. and then my last visit finishes at 9 p.m.
Oh, wow. So when you go to do like visits, do you always have to be with someone, or will it eventually be just on your own?
It'll eventually be just me, but because I've never done this before, I've just got to kind of see how everything goes.
Yeah.
I've got like, oh my god, I've got all my PPE equipment today, And my manager gave me like 10,000 masks. She gave me a huge box of gloves, and she gave me a massive roll full of like 200 aprons.
Oh my god!
What I've had to do, I've had to get one of my. There's a bag that I don't use very often, and it's like it's a designer bag, and it's quite big, and it's like a nice color and stuff. I don't usually use it because it looks too fancy.
Yeah.
Well, for me anyway, if anybody knows me personally, I'm not a fancy bitch. So it just looks too fancy for me, but it's massive, so I've managed to take out like all the aprons I'll need for my visit tomorrow. I folded them up quite neatly, put the box of gloves in and put all the masks in and everything, so...
That's good.
It's long. It's like set, like, I've got to be up at 6 in the morning to get ready, and then I'll be finished at 9. But, I don't know. The best thing about it is that like there's some time between some visits, so there's an hour between two visits, and then there's like an hour and 40 minutes between another visit, so instead of getting like a break, I just have like certain times where I don't have to do anything.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, definitely.
So I think that's a lot better than like what I was doing before, like a 13-hour shift and only having an hour break.
Yeah
So looking forward to it. It's going to be a long day, but...
It'll be worth it.
Yeah,
definitely.
I was offered to get it done in 2 days, so I'd do, like, a breakfast and a lunch shift, and then, like, a tea and a bedtime shift. But I just figured if I get it all done in one day, I can take everything in at once.
Yeah.
So that's good. But I'm guessing I'll get, like, all my full shifts maybe next week. So I'm looking forward to it. Something new.
Exciting. Do you have to wear, like, a uniform?
No, like literally, the best thing about it was the manager said to me, she turned around, she was like, "Well, there's no set uniform, but we do prefer that you wear all black or grey." I was like, "All black is my entire outfit. Like, everything I own is black. Do not worry."
Wow. So,
but obviously, quite a lot of stuff that I own is like graphic t-shirts and stuff, and they all look a little bit devilish. So I'm gonna have to buy some new t-shirts that are just black.
Oh god.
Anyway, how have you guys been?
Not bad.
Well, I gave you all that and I just get not bad.
Not bad. Just plodding on like normal.
PC plod over here.
Yeah, literally PC plod. Alright, just a bit with work, just because like people just just tiring, that's all.
People just being people, basically.
People are being people.
Word of advice to all of our listeners. If you're going to shop somewhere, don't be an asshole.
Especially in these times at the minute. Like, don't be a dick.
Please. Just like
a crisis for you guys.
Don't take it out on, like, people. Like, all the people that are working in retail right now. All the people that are working right now, like, we're just following guidelines. So please be respectful and just don't treat us like shit, basically. It's just draining otherwise for us.
I can preach that.
Mm-hmm.
All I get on the phone at the minute.
Oh, so hard. It is mentally draining.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Because, like, if there's, like, a day where you don't have any, like, good, like, feedback or good, like good customers or anything, and it's just a day full of customers having to go at you, it just, like, proper puts you down.
Yeah. Definitely.
It like makes you think, really, like, does. Am I doing a really shit job? Is that what it is?
Pretty much, yeah.
I had a woman cry to me on the phone earlier and I felt really bad.
Oh no.
But it wasn't my fault, don't worry.
What happened?
She called up just basically.
I believe Alyssa made a person cry.
She basically just called up and said, "Oh yeah, like, I just like want to double check my order's going to be dispatched now." And I like asked, like, for an order and I checked. I was like, "Yeah." I was like, "It's definitely going to get a day." And she's like, "Great." And then it went really quiet, and I was like, "Yeah." And then she was like, and then she all I heard was, and I was like,
"Oh god!"
And I said, "Oh, like, you know, you'll get it." And I was like, I tried to like kind of keep going on. I was like, "Yeah, you'll get an email when like your order's like been dispatched from there." And she went, "If you could just like really make sure that it gets dispatched today, please." I was like, "Yeah, that's fine." She went, "Thank you, bye." And I was like,
Oh my god.
I was like, "What is happening?"
Oh god.
So yeah, that was my day.
I don't even know how I would handle it. I'd be like, oh shit.
That's why I just kind of carried on, because I didn't want to be like, are you alright? It's a bit of an awkward question.
I'm like, I'm going to transfer you over. Excuse me, weepy bitch online too.
I don't deal with like crying very well. Like, I feel quite awkward. If it's someone I don't know, I feel quite awkward.
I feel awkward no matter who it is.
I'm just like,
I would have just turned around and been like, listen, if you start crying, I'm going to start crying, and then I'm going to get fired, and then you're going to have something to really cry about.
I can't, like, deal. Like, if any of you two were crying to me, I actually wouldn't know what to do. I don't deal with crying very well. Like, when I'm crying, everyone's like, are you okay? But I'm just like, I'm not like that. Like, not in a bad way, but I just can't, like, I don't know how to deal with it.
Yeah.
It's not my thing.
Wow, I can just imagine you if I cried in front of you, but oh shit, this rock solid bitch is crying. What the fuck am I supposed to do?
I'll do a Sheldon and be like, there.
Just poke me with a stick, there.
Literally the perfect response.
Well, there's that gif of that girl that's like thrown up over the toilet and he's got a broomstick.
Oh my god,
it's like, there. Okay, ladies, are we ready to go into the fog and talk about some more Dead by Daylight?
Indeed. Yeah.
So, the new Silent Hill chapter, what were your, like, immediate thoughts on it when we played a couple of games?
Awesome. Mm-hmm. What the fuck? This guy is terrifying. Where am I? What's going on? Why can't I get inside?
Literally, that was...
Basically, was the rundown of my entire thoughts.
It was so funny, because on the new map, obviously, you've got the outdoor bit, and I was on a hook inside, and Taryn couldn't find her way in. As soon as she finally found her way in, I was taken off the hook by someone else, and she was so pissed off.
Yeah, I remember it was like trying to get round, and I don't know, I was like on the edge of the building. Yeah. And I was like, okay, if I follow this, I'll find an entryway. And then I was like, right, I saw like some walls, and I saw the red outline of where you were hooked. And I was like, shit, she's right through there, I can go through there. And then went straight into a wall, and I was like, what the fuck? I was like, where's the door? I got into the door, and I was like, shit, I can hear his heartbeat, where is he? Trying to creep round you, and somebody came up and got you off the hook. I was like, okay, well, just render me useless then. Put all that effort in, and I got fucked over. It's like, okay, bye, and then proceeded to die. So
he is like a new killer. Is shit scary.
Oh god, yeah, definitely.
It freaks me out.
I can't.
No. Yeah, we know you can't, Benice. He is screaming just every 10
random times. Screams throughout the entire gameplay.
Yeah, I just can't.
Just like, screaming. We'll be like, what was that?
You're
like,
it was scary.
It's just, yeah. B, you do that thing where you scream and then we're like, B, what's going on? Where is he? What's going on? And then you just keep screaming and you like take pauses in between and then you scream again and then you finally tell us what's going on after something bad has happened and we're like,
Or you just turn up at the gen and we're like, B, where's the killer? And you're like, chasing me? And we're like, yeah, thank you.
Just have you noticed when I play Dead by Daylight, I'll scream, but when I play Warzone, I'm like, I make like different noises for different games. It's really dumb.
Yeah, like yeah, if someone's about, like, if someone like
scary though,
if someone creeps up behind B in Warzone and starts shooting her, she doesn't scream. She just goes, and we're like, what B?
Oh gosh,
maybe just start doing that in Dead by Daylight more often. Just gasp.
How about you just go, the killer is behind me.
I mean, if it is a killer that actually just jump scares you and just comes out of nowhere, like Miles or something, then I understand.
But when it's like the trapper and you can see him and hear him a mile away and you're like, ah! You're like, what's going on? You're like, ah! Okay, well, I don't know how to, like, decipher that.
Oh god, I'm always worse with certain killers as well. Like,
I've noticed any of the stealth killers, and you can barely get a fucking word out of you.
It's so funny.
You're like, who's the killer being? You're like, ah, well, I don't know who I is. Anybody.
It's a guessing game. You've got to guess.
Charade, but with screams.
Yeah.
She's going to start doing it in Morse code, but in screams instead.
Wow. That would be so genius, but so shit.
True. And Taryn, you're the only one that actually bought the DLC pack, aren't you?
I am, because the rest of you suck ass.
We don't
have
any.
I
will get it on Thursday when I get paid.
Okay.
I get paid next week, so I'll get it then.
So am I the only person that's got all the DLCs?
Yeah.
Yes.
They are so cheap. Just buy one a month if you have to, like £6.49.
Alright, I will.
Do it.
Alright.
So it's like seeing the same characters over and over again, guys. I don't want to see Kate and Meg and occasionally a Jane.
Hang on, I'm a Jane. I haven't played Meg in ages.
That's why I said, and occasionally a Jane.
Or just always a Jane for B.
I want some flavour in my games.
I'm sorry.
Give me some David, Bernice.
Jesus.
Some David.
What, David comes free, you idiot.
Does he?
Yeah.
She doesn't even know. She's like, what?
Yeah, you're getting free with the Winchers.
Survivors, don't know.
I can't remember who it is exactly. I think so. You get Dwight, Meg, Claudette, Jake, Feng, Nia, and David free. I think.
I thought you had to buy David, but I can't remember.
Yeah, because you get Trapper, Hillbilly, Nurse, Huntress, and Wraith free.
Yeah.
So.
That is true.
Yeah, everything else is a DLC. But like I said, it's all incredibly cheap for licensed stuff for quite a big game.
Yeah, it is really reasonably priced, to be fair.
Plus, it's nice to have all the options for different perks and stuff. So, I don't know. Cheryl's perks, okay.
Talk to me, T.
They are a little bit boring.
Okay, talk me through them.
One of them is basically if you heal the obsession, you can like see each other's auras.
Okay.
Unless they're being chased, I think. So it's not really anything special. I'm pretty sure we've got other stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
She's got another one that I don't remember because it's that boring.
Oh my god.
And then the main one, which I can't remember the name of because the name was a bit boring, is basically you work on a generator for, I think it's 180 seconds, which is basically you almost finish the generator with or without a toolbox.
Mm-hmm.
And basically you can like back off the generator and then like get the entity to block it.
Yeah.
And it then appears in a white aura for all the other survivors to see.
Yeah.
The only way I can think of that actually being useful is if you are working on the last generator and the killer comes over, because then you can back off. If you block it, he can't kick it. And then if he chases you, whoever, like the other survivors can see, that gen's almost finished, it's blocked off, so the killer can't kick it. If it's the last gen, if we go over and finish that, we can escape.
Yeah.
That's the only way I can think of it being useful. Because why would you just go randomly blocking off fucking generators?
That's what I mean, I think it pisses people off.
Yeah.
I can see a lot of people abusing that, and like they'll like jump on a gen with people, and then like the last second they'll just like come off it, and it's just like, really? Like, do you have to do that?
I'm not sure if you can block it if there's another person on it.
Yeah.
I think you can, but because I think I saw that in the PTB, but I think they might have changed it because, I don't know.
Maybe.
It's not a very good perk otherwise, I don't think. It's obviously good for endgame.
Yeah.
Or at least to get you to endgame, but I think obviously if you're not really too fussed about that it can be a waste of a perk.
That's fair enough.
I think you can only use it once, maybe. Not sure.
What, like once per game?
Yeah, which would be really fucking stupid.
Also true.
I haven't played as Pyramid Head, so I can't remember fully what all of his perks are. But we have been over them
before. We have. Yeah, we went over them the last episode. Yeah.
The thing I enjoyed most was the fact that usually new killers either feel really shit to play against, like they're just bad, or they're too overpowered. With Pyramid Head, he feels kind of perfect.
Yeah.
So yeah, he doesn't feel too overpowered. He doesn't feel too underpowered. He just kind of feels like, same way you feel against playing against like Trapper and stuff, they feel like they've been adjusted just enough.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
They're kind of difficult to play against if they play it right, but they're not overpowered. So I think that's what I'm really enjoying, is that they seem to have got this chapter kind of spot on instantly.
Which is good.
So
yeah, definitely.
I haven't had time to check out the legendary outfits yet, like the cosmetics.
Mm-hmm.
I hear they've been having some problems with them. I haven't really looked too much into that, so I can't really explain it. But I think once I get paid, I'll buy a couple more Auric cells and maybe buy one of the other legendary cosmetics. I think that'd be cool. I'd like to see something like that for like the other licensed characters. I think that'd be awesome.
Pretty yeah, cool.
Definitely, I think it'd be awesome. Yeah, I think it'd be awesome if you could, like, you know, Quentin from Nightmare on Elm Street. I think it'd be awesome if you could play as Nancy.
Yeah.
So obviously it'd have to be Nancy from the latest movie instead of the original, but it'd be something.
Yeah.
So
that would be quite interesting to see if they did that. I'd like that.
Yeah, me too. What did you guys think of it?
I mean, I think I think it's the same with, like, whenever we get a new chapter, like, anyway, no matter who it is, like, it's always at first, it's like you just said, like, at first you think it's the killer's really overpowered, you're like, it's shit, like, I'm not playing this. But then obviously once you then get used to how you play against that certain killer, it's fine then.
Yeah.
So, like, the first, because obviously we haven't played many, like, much DBD for, like, how long has it been? Like, over a week?
Yeah, it's been a while.
So I think maybe, like, after playing a few more games of it, I'll probably get used to it. I think it's just the map, though. That's what's probably going to take. Yeah,
that map is fucking huge.
Because even the Stranger Things map, I still cannot get used to that.
I still get lost.
Yeah. Because they just make the maps very big. So I think that'll just take some getting used to, because it is a lot bigger, but we'll just have to see how it goes, I suppose.
Yeah, I always find, like, with those sort of maps, I always get lost. But yeah, I really like the new chapter. It's just, like, it's fucking scary. It's the way, like, when he puts his blade down and it just, like, runs. And like, I got stuck in a corner a couple of times as well.
Yeah, me too. There's a dead end that I hit.
Yeah, there is definitely. There's definitely a lot of dead ends in this one compared to, like, the other maps. But yeah, I am really enjoying it, though. I do really enjoy it. It's just, it's fucking scary.
Well, that's
but that's why we play the game.
Okay, so this is the part of the episode where we go into the horror archives. Are you ladies ready for the horror archives this week?
Yeah.
Yes.
Are you all prepared?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, so I'm up first with True Crime Time, and have I got a story for you?
Damn.
Let me just get it up. Bang, bang.
Are you having trouble getting it up, Alyssa?
I always have trouble getting it up, Taryn.
They have pills for that now.
I hope so. Okay. So my true crime of the week is about a girl called Mary Bell. I don't know if you guys have ever heard this before. Okay, so Mary Bell, she was born on the 26th of May, 1957, in Newcastle. her mother was only 16 years old when she had her.
Rough.
And her mother was a sex worker who apparently, when Mary was born, she told the doctors to take that thing away from me.
Wow.
Jesus Christ. It was
parenting.
Oh, don't worry. Things went downhill from there. So her mom was often away from home on business trips, and business trips is in quotes. But her absences kind of affected Mary a lot. She was subject to abuse, both mental and physical, when her mom was around. So her mom's own sister witnessed her trying to give Mary away to a woman who'd been unsuccessfully trying to adopt. Mary was also apparently accident prone. She once, in quotes, fell from a window, and on another occasion, in quotes, accidentally overdosed on sleeping pills.
Yeah, as if.
Yes, because a 10-year-old kid.
That was definitely Mama Dearest.
So some attribute to the accidents, to her mom's determination to rid herself of Mary. So what it basically did, one of the falls that Mary took actually gave her brain damage.
Jesus.
That's rough. That's really bad.
So, on the 11th of May, which was a day before Mary's 11th birthday, I believe, she had been playing with a 3-year-old boy, and his name, would you like to know his name?
Yes.
Would you like to know his name?
Yes.
Yeah.
His name was Martin Brown.
Oh, poor Martin. He didn't know what's coming.
And he was only 3 years old as well. So she'd been playing with him, and he was badly injured from a fall on top of an air raid shelter. His parents thought that it was an accident. However, the following day, three mothers came forward to tell police that Mary had attempted to choke their young daughters. A brief police interview and a lecture resulted, but no charges were actually filed. Oh, sorry, I got that boy's name wrong. It doesn't actually say the boy's name. It just says she was playing with a 3-year-old boy.
Oh, right, okay.
I'm so professional. So, on the 25th of May, Mary Bell lured a 4-year-old to an abandoned house and strangled him to death. And that was Martin Brown that she did that to.
Okay.
She left the scene and returned with a friend, and her name was Norma. When they had arrived at the scene, they'd found that they'd been beaten there by two local boys who had been playing in the house and had found the body. So, besides a little blood and saliva on Martin Brown's face, there was no obvious signs of violence. There was, however, an empty bottle of painkillers on the floor near the body. They assumed that he had just swallowed the pills, and they ruled his death as an accident, basically.
Wow.
That's
the type of shoddy police work I expect.
Yeah.
So, Martin's family, however, started to suspect otherwise when she showed up on their doorstep a few days after his death and asked to see him. His mother told her that Martin was dead, and Mary said she already knew that, but she wanted to see his body in the coffin.
Wow, what a crazy bitch.
Because that's normal. Yeah.
So, shortly after this, Mary and her friend Norma, they broke into a nursery and vandalised it with notes taking responsibility for Martin Brown's death, and they promised to kill again. Police assumed that the notes were a prank. So the nursery, what they basically did, they installed an alarm system. They then caught Mary and Norma at the scene of the crime several nights later, but as they were simply loitering outside when the police arrived, they were just let off the hook. So because it was only alarm they got installed, and I'm guessing not CCTV, they couldn't actually see anything that was going on when they arrived at the scene.
Yeah.
Which is fucking dumb.
Yeah, definitely.
During all this, Mary was telling her classmates that she was the one that killed Martin Brown. Her reputation became that she was a show-off and a liar, and it prevented anyone from taking her claims seriously.
Wow.
So... On July 31st, 2 months after the first murder, Mary Bell and her friend Norma killed 3-year-old Brian Howe by strangulation. This time, Mary mutilated the body with scissors, scratching his thighs and butchering his penis.
Wow, Mary, you fucking psycho.
So aggressive.
She's 11 at this point.
Jesus Christ.
This is
why children are scary, y'all.
They really are.
Yeah.
So when Brian's sister went looking for him, Mary and Norma actually offered to help her. And they helped her search the whole neighbourhood. And Mary even pointed out the concrete blocks where they'd hidden his body.
Wow.
But Norma, so the other person that obviously like helped kill him, turned to her and said that he wouldn't be there, and they all just moved on.
Wow.
Even though she knew he was there.
Typical psycho behaviour, injecting yourself into the investigation.
Exactly. So when Brian's body was finally found, the neighbourhood went into a whole panic because two boys were dead in many months. Police interviewed local children, hoping someone had seen something that would lead to a suspect. They received a shock when the coroner's report came back that as Brian's blood had cooled from his death, the letter M had been marked on his torso with a razor blade.
Damn.
Jesus.
The coroner's also gave the police another note saying that the lack of force used in the attack suggested that his killer might have been a child, because obviously the force that was given from the strangulation, they could tell it wasn't like a hard like strangulation. You could tell someone struggled quite a lot to do it.
Yeah, it's the way it's like if someone's like making, like if someone gets cut as well, you can tell by the pressure that it's been put on the blade into the area that's being cut, the incisions, yeah. Like bruising and stuff like that. Because if an adult strangled a child, like they would most likely crush their windpipe completely,
or break their neck,
Yeah.
Whereas if it's a kid, the most you're gonna get is bruising.
Yeah. Basically.
So. Mary and Norman did a poor job of disguising their interest in the investigation in their interviews with the police. Apparently, they both acted very strangely. Norman seemed to be very excited about the situation, and Mary was very evasive, especially when the police pointed out that she'd been seen with Brian on the day of his death. On the day of Brian's funeral, Mary was spotted lurking outside his house. She apparently was laughing and rubbing her hands together as she looked at the coffin.
Wow. Typical evil shit. Wow.
It's like, what the fuck? It's just not, no.
Can you imagine being at a funeral for a little boy and then just seeing a girl going, wow.
Oh, just like, my God.
What the fuck?
The fun tarnation?
Who invited this psycho?
So,
Jesus.
The police called her back for a second interview. And Mary sensed that the police were closing in on her. So she basically made up a story about seeing an 8-year-old boy hit Brian on the day that he died. She said that the boy had been carrying a pair of broken scissors, which would have explained like the marks on him. However, the mutilation of the body with scissors had been kept from the press and the public, and the only people that knew about it were the investigators.
Wow, that's how they get you.
Yeah.
So both Norma and Mary broke down under further questioning. Norma began cooperating with the police and implicated Mary was basically responsible for both deaths. So at the trial, the prosecutor told the court that Mary's reason for committing the murders was solely for the pleasure and excitement of killing. The newspaper, the British newspaper, would refer to her as an evil born.
Basically, yeah.
So the jury agreed that Mary had committed the murders and handed down a guilty verdict in December. They said that she had classic symptoms of a psychopath and could not be held fully responsible for her actions.
Wow.
The judge concluded that Mary was a dangerous person and a serious threat to other children, so she was sentenced to be imprisoned at Her Majesty's pleasure, which basically means they'll keep her locked up until they feel like it's appropriate to let her out again. It's basically
Fucking never.
Yeah.
So, in 1980, Mary was let out because they thought that they felt it was appropriate to let her out at that time.
Wow. Good job, guys.
So she was given a new identity to try and give her a new chance at life and protect her from sort of like the public and like the press and stuff like that. She was forced to move several times because like newspapers and stuff would always find her. In 1984, she had a daughter with her husband. So she got married during this.
Who married this psycho? Looked at that and went, you know what? That's the kind of thing I like.
So she had a daughter in 1984. And when her daughter turned, and like throughout her like daughter's life, she never knew about what her mother had done in previous times.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, when she was 14, someone managed to track down Mary's husband, and then, which then tracked down their daughter, and then she then found out about her mother.
Wow. What a way to find out.
So today, she is still in protective custody, a secret address. Both her and her daughter remain anonymous to this day and protected under court order. A lot of people feel she doesn't deserve the protection. The mother of Martin Brown, who was the first child she killed, told the media that it's all about her and how she has to be protective. As victims, we are not given the same right as killers.
Very true.
Nevertheless, Mary Bell remains protected by the British government today, and court rulings protecting the identities of certain convicts are even unofficially referred to as the Mary Bell orders. So that's where that saying comes from.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's she's still alive today as well, I believe.
Wow.
That's quite scary.
This
really.
Whole country is just like, hey, let's protect these bad people.
She's
good job, Britain.
Yeah, she's 63.
Oh wow!
Probably still a psychopath.
It's just more than nightmare.
Once you start exhibiting symptoms, you know, like you know what I mean, like things that would inquire that you're like a psychopath. They don't go away. That's not. Not a disease. Being a psychopath, it's genetic. Okay. It's settled in your DNA.
Apparently, she's also got a granddaughter now.
I bet they're all fucking psychos.
Oh, man.
I'm sorry, you can't have a mother that is literally a psycho murderer and not, you know, and not kind of inherit some of that.
Yeah, I suppose some of it could be due to like the trauma she's had. Because sometimes it is down to that, and it can be sometimes down to brain damage as well. So you just, I don't know. I suppose it depends how she then raises her child.
Yeah. Who knows? Maybe we'll never find out.
It's like, is it the Venable case?
Jesus, I remember that.
Yeah, like they were protected for so long, weren't they, as well?
Yeah, they still are.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. The guy that I can't remember his name. But it was the older kid that kind of coerced like everything.
Yeah,
obviously when he got out of prison they gave him a new identity and they moved him around and stuff, only to find out that he was still like searching up kiddie porn and stuff like that. He was literally a psycho from the get-go, and they're still protecting him, they're still hiding his identity.
So fucked up. And
that poor mother never actually got any full justice. They sent him to prison, so what? But I mean, the stuff that they did,
it was atrocious.
Disgusting.
Okay, so now it's time in the horror archives for some scary tales for spooky bitches. Benice, I am ready. Yes. Take me there.
Okay, so this one's called The Roommate's Death. So there were these two girls and they were roommates and they went to a university, a small school, and one night their school was having an all-school campus dance. And so the two girls decided to go to the dance and they thought they'd meet some boys that way. So when they got to the dance, they were dancing and having a good time. And then one of the girls got sick, so she decided to go back to the dorm because she felt ill. But to get to the dorm from where the dance was, she had to go through some woods. And there was a rumour out that a man just escaped from an insane asylum. And she was a little bit scared to go back by herself. But she felt really ill and she didn't want her roommate to miss out on the fun. So she told her that she was going back and she went ahead anyway.
Yeah.
Oh my God. This is the story that I think it is. I love this one.
Oh,
chills
it is?
Every time. Chills.
Okay. So, on her way through the woods, she heard this heavy breathing sound coming up behind her. And she didn't want to turn back because she was afraid. She was really scared. So, she was afraid she'd let them know that she'd heard them if she turned back.
Yeah.
The person who was back there. So, she walked a little bit faster. And the panting got a little bit heavier behind her and she wasn't going to turn back. So she began to run and she ran all the way back to her dorm. But the whole time she was running, she could still hear this heavy panting behind her. So she ran in the dorm and up the stairs and down the hallway and into her room. And she still heard this panting coming up behind her. So she got in her room and she watched the doorknob began to turn.
Terrifying.
Yeah, that's not a nice thought.
I hate that in movies where you see like the doorknob turn, you're like, no.
I literally just turn around and I'm like, that's fucking disgusting. Pretty much.
Wow.
So she got in the closet because it was the only place she knew of that she could get in. And then she heard the door of a room open while she was still in the closet. And then all of a sudden, she heard this scraping noise. So she heard, it sounded like claws, scraping the closet door.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And there was, really heavy breathing and panting as well. And obviously, because she was really scared, she screamed. And she screamed so loud that a counsellor who was on duty heard her scream. And then, basically ran upstairs to see what was going on, and she found the girl's roommate outside the closet door with a throat slit.
Oh God.
Yeah, so she'd been really scared that her roommate would come in contact with a man from that insane asylum, and she thought it was that guy, but it wasn't, it was her roommate. And she'd basically gone Her roommate had basically been worried about her going on her own, so she followed her, and on the way following her, the guy from that asylum slit her throat, and obviously she was running back with her friend, I guess, because she was running away from the guy, but she was also making sure that her friend got got out safely, I guess, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, so basically her friend was trying to get home, and obviously she was attacked and her throat was slit, but not enough to kill her. And obviously when you throat slit, you can't exactly scream, can you?
No.
So obviously her friend starts running because she can hear her friend with the throat slit trying to catch up and like signal to get help, basically, or signal to get away. And obviously because they're going to the same place, but she's too afraid to look behind her and she can't hear, and like the other person can't say anything. And obviously all she wants is some fucking help.
Yeah, literally.
That'd be the worst thing. Why didn't she just go find the counsellor? Why is she like, nah, my roommate has to bear this burden? Why didn't she just go find the counsellor? She survived long enough to get up to the room.
Yeah. Imagine going through that though, like where you can't scream. It's like when you have like nightmares and something bad's happening and you go to scream and like it just won't come out.
That's why you should take a bell everywhere.
Who the fuck
is ringing a bell? Everyone's going to hear this bell and nobody's going to be like, oh, bell's ringing. They're going to be like, who the fuck is ringing that bell? And then you're just there like,
Okay, Taryn.
Yes, bitch.
Yes.
Are you ready?
Are you ready?
Of Little Shop of Horror Flicks.
I am, yes.
You better be fucking ready.
Better be fucking ready.
I'm fucking ready.
I'm sorry.
Okay, go.
So, a movie.
Wow. Well done. That's it.
Brilliant. That's the segment.
Oh, okay. That was quick.
I know, right? So, yeah, this is a movie that I love a lot. Like, a lot.
Uh-huh.
I like it a lot.
It's like, I don't know, top five. Okay, that's a lie. Top six. It's part of a trilogy currently.
Can I guess what it is?
Go on then.
Is it Twilight?
How did you know?
It just came to me.
Jokes on you, the first Twilight movie was terrible. Breaking Dawn Part 2 and Eclipse are where you want to be.
True.
I've never seen the Twilight films.
Time for an education.
They may be cringy and they may be stupid sometimes, but
it's an experience you have to have.
Everybody has to have the experience.
I think that's why I've not watched them, because they look cringy.
They're not too bad. Like,
oh, okay.
But I don't know. Yeah, I guess they are cringy, but at the same time, certain things are cringy. Yeah. Always. Like, I mean, for some people, the Harry Potter series are cringy. Like, ugh, Harry Potter, jeez.
Do you know what part of Twilight I can't watch?
Which bit?
I don't know if it's the first one where it's like those three vampires that are like after her.
Yeah.
I don't like it when he kidnaps her, and does he break her leg or something?
Yeah, that's not.
Because like you hear it and it's like.
Yeah, it always makes me cringe. I'm like, ugh.
Like a crunching noise.
Yeah. And it's gross. Nice. Anyway, Taryn, go.
It's jokes on you, it's not Twilight.
Oh,
just
fuck. Heads up. Dang it.
Sorry.
Unlucky.
I wasn't gonna spoil it for B.
Okay.
Any other guesses?
Nice. Finding Nemo.
Is it a Rob Zombie film?
B, how did you know?
Because you said it's a trilogy.
Wow.
And you said you didn't want to spoil it for me. I know the Rob Zombie films.
So, yes, you are.
Especially Devil's Rejects.
Okay, the Devil's Rejects has got to be like number 2 on my top 10 list of horror.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think it's definitely my favourite out of the trilogy so far, but.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
This one's still up on the list.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's obviously going to be House of 1,000 Corpses. I'm not going to start you off at the end of the trilogy, am I? I'm going to start you off at the beginning.
And you're going to go through all three right now.
Well, not right now, I will eventually.
Okay.
I don't consider this movie SFL, safe for Liz.
Okay.
Not yet, anyway. There's not a lot of gore in it, but there is some. I genuinely think if I was to take some of the gory parts out, which aren't a lot, I think you could actually watch this.
Okay. I'm listening.
Okay, there's a lot of, like, dark humour in it. B, would you agree?
Yeah,
it's not as much as the other two movies. The other two movies can be fucking hilarious.
Oh, God, yeah. They're
Tutti fucking Frutti.
Frutti!
Yeah, that's from the second movie. Like, I think you could actually watch the second movie. It's not.
Yeah,
it's
I think you should be fine with the second.
Yeah, so first things first.
I'm a realist.
I knew you were going to do that. Which is why I paused. Rob Zombie actually doesn't like this movie. Like, so he's aware that it's, like, for horror fans, it's a cult classic. But he thought this movie, which is why The Devil's Reject and Three from Hell see different movies.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm not sure why, but you can definitely tell there's a difference between them. Like, B, obviously, you would know that.
Yeah.
Like I said, the other two movies are a lot more dark humour comedy types.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they just seem a little bit... This movie was trying to be what it is. It was trying to be snuff movie-like. It was trying to be like Texas Chainsaw. But obviously, by Devil's Reject, and therefore, like, Three from Hell, it had finally found what it was, in a way.
Yeah.
It found the perfect balance, whereas, obviously, when you watch the first one, you can definitely tell it's trying to be too much like Texas Chainsaw and any kind of, like, old snuff movie type. But I enjoy it nonetheless. It doesn't feel as free as the other movies, but, like, it's still a really good plot. Great acting, great makeup, all that jazz. So I'm going to talk you through it, and I'm going to add little notes in between. There's not as many notes in this. I think I had more thoughts on The Green Inferno because it was absolutely fucking disgusting.
Yeah. That was horrific.
With this movie, I enjoyed it so much that I didn't really have a lot to talk about after. Everything was just kind of perfect. Mm-hmm. So I'll start you off with the opening scene. It's a black and white TV segment, and on it is a character called Dr. Wolfenstein. Okay. He looks a little bit freaky. He's got like weird makeup and weird sideburns. Yeah, not a fan.
Okay.
Basically, he is hosting a Halloween horror movie marathon. They're all like oldies but goldies. And that's then followed on TV by an advert with a clown on it, and his name is Captain Spaulding, and he's played by the wonderful Sid Haig.
Yeah.
Rest in peace, my brother.
So sad.
Basically, he's showing off his. It's a gas station, okay, but he's made it into a little bit of something more. It's like a tourist attraction, and that's called Captain Spaulding's Museum of Monsters and Madmen. It's basically a gas station outside, and then when you go in, there's like memorabilia, like horror and true crime everywhere. This man has a serial killer / murder ride in the back room.
Lovely.
Yeah. And he also sells fried chicken, which for me is the staple. Like, I'm going to go anywhere, I'm probably going to get murdered. They better have fried chicken is all I'm going to say.
Lovely.
So you start off in a small Texas town. It's called Ruggsville. And it shows the date, which is October 30th, 1977. So the sheriff is outside filling up his gas tank, and then it moves to inside, and you see Spaulding in his clown costume and his makeup, and just one of his pals. His name's Stucky. He's short, he's old, and he's a little bit foul-mouthed. Basically, they're talking about a topless autograph of June Wilkinson that Stucky has. Lovely. And he's talking about selling it, but he can't because it's autographed, and obviously it's got his name on it. Then the conversation moves on to they're just chatting shit about the simpleton who works down the road. A phrase that comes up that I absolutely love, and will forever use for male masturbation is they're talking about how stupid he is and how he keeps, like, he spends most of his time whacking his weasel.
Oh my God.
I've never heard that before, but it, like, for some reason, every time I hear it, I'm like, oh my God, and I, like, start to laugh. I think it's funny. I'm not sure why. Just, it, I don't know. It's not even the image it gives me.
You can just see someone literally whacking a weasel.
With his penis.
Yeah.
Sure.
This is like, am I getting that? But okay.
Anyway.
The thing I like about this movie that I'll say now is anytime the characters have conversations that aren't really related to the plot, it all seems really casual. Like, I can imagine going into, like, a gas station and just hearing these two just chat shit about the guy down the street.
Love that.
They finish their conversation and Stucky goes to the bathroom. I think Captain Spaulding makes a remark about, like, telling him not to, like, plug the toilet or whatever. And he mutters some sarcastic shit under his breath. Basically, while that's going down, two guys decide to come into, like, the gas station. They've got masks on and they've got guns and they try and rob Spaulding. Basically, he turns around and he sees his gun pointed at him and he goes, holy fucking Moses!
Oh my God.
Basically, the other guy goes and gets stuck out the bathroom and they're, like, holding them at gunpoint. And the main guy, his name's Killer Carl, he basically tells Spaulding to hand over anything that's in the cash register. And Spaulding turns around and he goes, why don't you take your mama home some chicken and I might not have to shove my boot up your ass. And this guy's holding the gun and he's like, is this guy really mouthing off to me? I think it's absolutely funny because I don't know what persuaded these two idiots to rob somewhere that is obviously inhabited by psychos. But they're going to do it anyway. Basically, he says, listen, if you don't hand me what's in the cash register, I'm going to shoot your friend. And Spaulding's like, well, fuck your mama. He's like, I'm serious, I'll kill him. And he goes, fuck your sister.
Oh, God.
And then while they're, like, chatting shit to each other, Stucky turns around to the guy that's, like, holding him at gunpoint, and he goes, hey, ain't you the guy that works down at the hardware store? And this guy is like, no. and he's like, and then everyone is like, oh my God, it is, it's you. And then they, I don't know, they just start threatening each other, but it's all stupid shit. And it's quite funny. And basically the guy ends up taking his mask off and he's like, he recognizes me. And then he's like, put your fucking mask back on. And he turns back to Spaulding and he's like, give me the fucking cash. He goes, and he's like, Spaulding turns and goes, fuck your grandma. And so by this point, the robbers are getting really irritated. And they're some shit is about to go down. But then the front door busts open and there's a third guy that crashes through the door. He's wearing a giant clown helmet. He's fucking massive. And he just smashes the main guy with a giant mallet. He just beats him. And then the idiot that, like, you know, they recognise from the hardware store, he shoots Stucky in the shoulder by accident. And then Spaulding pulls out a gun that he's had the whole time, shoots this guy in the head, and then walks over to the guy that was demanding the money from the cash register. And he, like, points his gun at him and he goes, but most of all, fuck you! And then he shoots him.
Oh my God.
And you're left at the end of that opening scene, you're like, what the fuck did I just watch? What the hell? Then another part of the movie that is my absolute favourite is the opening credits, because immediately after that gunshot we hear Rob Zombie's song House of a Thousand Corpses, which is actually the final track on his second solo album, The Sinister Urge. It's a dark, gritty kind of song, and obviously Rob Zombie's vocals are fucking, they're deep.
Oh, God, they're so good.
But the song is actually really awesome. The lyrics that it starts off with was, there's a corpse under her bed, she had her fun but now he's dead. And then obviously it goes on and obviously the chorus is, this is the house, come on in, this is the house built on sin. It's basically the entire film in a song.
So, love that.
It's really catchy as well. Like, you have no idea the amount of times I've been walking around doing something and just started singing that in my head, and I'm like, oh my god. So we get the opening credits, which is a bunch of kind of like home videos of like the Firefly family, and they're like,
okay.
And then it moves on to four kids. They're driving down the road. The two girls are asleep in the back. That's Denise and Mary. And then you've got the two guys up front. So you've got Jerry, who is reading a book and looking at some pictures. He's played by Chris Hardwick. Don't know if you guys know who he is.
No.
His name rings a bell. I'm trying to think who
he is. Yeah, he presents the AMC after show for The Walking Dead. So he's the host of The Talking Dead.
Okay,
and he also hosts... I don't think it's running anymore, but he used to host like a podcast and a blog called Nerdist.
Okay.
I'm quite familiar with him, but the amount of times I saw that movie and then obviously watched The Talking Dead and didn't kind of put the two and two together because he looks quite different. He was obviously a lot like chubbier back when they filmed House of a Thousand Corpses.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So obviously it didn't register. I remember watching the movie one day and going, oh my god. The other guy who he's driving is called Bill. He is played by Rainn Wilson, who plays the guy in The Office.
Yeah, the guy with the glasses.
Yes.
Dwight.
Yes, oh, Dwight. Dwight, yeah. You ignorant slut.
Dwight.
Sweet.
That's him. I've never actually watched The Office properly, so my bad. But yeah, Jerry really cracks me up in this scene. I'm not sure if you guys have seen the Gogglebox episode where the two guys, I can't remember the name, they're sat there watching something, I think it's the news or something, and one of them goes, well, we all love a bad boy, don't we?
Yes!
And he goes, but not a fucking terrorist though, Chris.
I've seen it on the advertisement, but I haven't actually watched Gogglebox.
Yeah, well, basically, this is a similar scenario. When I first watched it, I was absolutely in tears because it was fucking hilarious. So driving down the road, and there's a broadcast playing about like some missing cheerleaders. And so Jerry, who is, I think, reading this book about the Manson family, sits down and he goes, the Manson chicks were hot. And Bill looks at him, like side-eyes him, looks back at the road and goes, Jesus Christ, Jerry! And I was like, oh my god, because that would be me. Basically, they stop at the gas station and, like, Spalding is mopping up some blood. He's not doing a very good job, so you can kind of tell that something bad happened, and these kids are like, yeah, that's fine. They wake the girls up and they go inside, and then they find out that there's a back and they absolutely have to do it. Now, the one thing I will tell you, okay, they are the biggest killjoys ever. So obviously the two guys are like nerding out. They're like, oh my god, serial killers, yeah. And the girls are like, really, guys, really? Can we just fucking go? Like, you guys are being stupid.
Yeah.
And I was like, really? These bitches deserve to die, okay? Deserve it.
Love that.
Like, you cannot be supportive of your partner. You don't deserve to have one.
Love that.
That was my entire attitude towards these girls throughout the entire movie. Basically, Spalding takes them on the tour. So they've got serial killers like Albert Fish and Lizzie Borden and Ed Gein. The last one they introduce is Dr. Satan. Now, Dr. Satan was a local doctor in Ruggsville. And basically, he used to experiment on his patients. And like eventually they were like, oh my god, this guy is a serial killer, let's murder him. So they hung him up from a tree, and a day later his body was missing and they've never found it since.
Okay.
So basically they're like, hey, we want to go to this Dr. Satan tree. Can you tell us where to go? And Spalding's like, nah, don't be crazy.
Oh, God.
And they're like, literally, we have to. And he's like, oh my God, fine. So he draws them a map. And so the kids leave. They're like, going to go check out this tree. And it starts to rain. As they're driving down the road, they see like a really sexy looking hitchhiker, which is Baby Firefly. So they pick her up. She gets in the car. And then there, like, there's a scene where you see some guy crouched in the bushes and he shoots their tire out.
Oh Lord.
Yeah. So basically, baby's like, okay, I will take you to my stop, Jason, you fucking idiot. Where did I get to?
So baby said she'll take them too.
Yeah. So baby says she'll take them to her house because her brother Rufus drives a tow truck.
Okay.
So if they go get Rufus, he can come and like tow their car to the house and fix the tire. So her and Bill leave and they get to the house. When they get to the house, all these dolls are like mutilated and like hung up on the
I'm gonna knock you out, Jason.
Jason making yet another appearance on the podcast.
Yeah, he's just being a little dick. I'm not playing. Fuck off. I'm not playing. No.
Nutty.
Where did I get to this?
So there's mutilated dolls hanging around.
Yeah. And there's like dolls hanging from like the porch area that have been mutilated and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He goes in, she helps him out of his clothes and like dries them. She makes him a hot chocolate. Basically, some really cute shit. And then the rest of the kids get there when Rufus tows them back, and that's when they meet Mama Firefly. Now, she's kind of ugly. She's a little bit slutty, and she's got like rotten teeth and everything. She's supposed to be disgusting though, so makes sense. Basically, she convinces the kids to like stay for dinner.
Okay.
So they meet. So they're all sat around dinner, and they're all like, Mama Firefly makes them wear like masks and stuff to like celebrate Halloween. Tiny comes in first. Now they call him Tiny, but that's very ironic because he is not Tiny.
Okay.
He's like 8 foot something. He's like terribly deformed, and he's like burned everywhere, so he's wearing a mask.
Yeah.
And basically Mama Firefly explains that her husband burned the house down, starting in the basement, and Tiny was sleeping in the basement, and stuff like that. We also get introduced to Grandpa Hugo, who is disgusting. Okay, he looks like a wolf man.
Lovely.
But he's foul-mouthed and gross. In my notes next to where I put that, it just says ew. Now, whilst dinner is happening downstairs, upstairs is one of the brothers. His name is Otis.
Uh-huh.
And a little bit hot for Otis.
Okay.
I'm not gonna lie.
Alright.
He's here.
Love that.
Basically, he is ranting and torturing the missing cheerleaders.
Oh.
Yeah.
Lovely.
Listen, that he was hot, not that he was sane. So basically he goes downstairs when Jerry starts to ask about Dr. Satan and where they can find the tree. He is carrying a jar with a fetus in it. Okay?
Okay.
A fetus. It's disgusting.
Sounds gross.
Yeah. So basically he brings the fetus downstairs and he's like cradling it. And when he gets to the table, Mama Firefly is like, Otis, I'm so glad you've joined us. And then she starts kissing the glass jar of fetus. Yeah. A little bit crazy. Basically, Otis like tells them everything they need to know about Dr. Satan. Blah, blah, blah. It makes them very uncomfortable while he's doing it. Then to celebrate Halloween, the family decide that they're going to put on like a weird kind of Halloween talent show kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's very disgusting. So Grandpa Hugo goes first and he starts telling like disgusting jokes about eating pussy and all that.
Love that.
Yeah. And the rest of the time he just screams really loudly. Pause. My throat's gone really dry. Okay, I need to start again.
Okay, go now.
which is, it's just incredibly uncomfortable to watch, because he's just like, he's just going, ah, ah, and it's you're like, what the fuck? And then Baby comes out onto the stage that they've made with, in a long white dress, and she's got her hair pinned up, and she's got like doll makeup on, so she's got all white makeup on. Mm-hmm. But then, you know how people do their makeup sometimes with like bright red lipstick on their lips, but they only do it in like the curve at the top and a little bit at the bottom.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So it's like doll makeup. She's lip syncing to a song called I Wanna Be Loved By You. It's like a popular 1940s pop song. Mm-hmm. And while she's doing that, so she's like moving around, she's like dancing around. She starts like flirting with Bill, like getting on his lap and singing to him. Mary, who is Bill's girlfriend, pushes her off and calls her a whore. Not the thing you want to do, because this bitch about to cut you. So like, Baby pulls out a pocket knife, and he tells, and she, like, she says like she's gonna gut her like a pig and stuff. Luckily, Rufus comes in the door and he's like, "Your car is fixed. Get out." So everybody piles in the car and they start to leave, and they get to a massive gate at the edge of the property. So Bill's like, "Okay, I'll get out," and he goes out and he goes to open the gate, and as he does, two scarecrows that are on the side of the gate, they come to life. In reality, it's Tiny and Otis dressed up as scarecrows. Basically, they beat the shit out of the guys, they kidnap the girls, and they like beat shit out of the car.
Lovely.
The next scene is Mary. She wakes up in Otis's bedroom and she's like crying, she's gagged and stuff, and Otis is like, "Listen, if you don't scream, I'll take the gag off." So she agrees, he takes the gag off, and the first thing she says is, "Where's Bill?" And Otis is like, "Oh, Bill's fine, don't worry about it. He actually helped me get out of a stump." And everyone's like, "What?" He's like, "Oh yeah, like I was having creative difficulties, but it's all fine now, it's all sorted. Bill is A-okay." And she's like, "Can I see him?" And that is the last thing the bitch should be asking. But Otis is like, "Yeah, okay." So he like turns her around in the chair and pulls back a curtain, and it's just Bill's upper half on top of like a fish body, like it's been attached, like sewn together and then painted. And he presents him as Fish Boy. It's pretty cool. I mean, it's very morbid, but it's actually good art.
Okay.
Like, if it wasn't a real torso, it'd be fine. So then we skip to Baby, who is in another room, and she's like, she goes up to Jerry, and she like sits on his lap, and she starts cutting his hair, but like really short, so it's all like clumpy.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like trying to get away from her, and she just stops. She looks at him really seriously, and she goes, "Stop moving! I don't want to slip." And so he like stops moving, and then she starts scalping him. And he's like, "Ah!" And she's like, "Well, I did say, duh." It's just, that's the bit that I think, that's the bit that makes me cringe the most in the movie. Is I'm really weird with what makes me cringe, like breaking bones and scalping, apparently.
Yeah.
Now this next bit is probably one of my favorite scenes in the movie.
Okay, I'm ready.
So Denise is in the basement. She's tied to the bed by her hands and stuff. Mm-hmm. She wakes up and she's like trying to get out, but then the door of the basement opens and Tiny comes down, and now he is carrying a dog bowl, a spoon, and a box of cereal.
Okay.
Down next to the bed, and he like puts the dog bowl on his lap and puts the spoon in it, and then he turns the cereal box around, and the cereal box is a brand called Agatha Crispies. Yeah. He pours those into the dog bowl and he starts to eat them, and obviously because he doesn't talk, he like puts the dog bowl towards Denise to ask if she wants any, and she's like, "What the fuck, get away from me." So he just starts eating it, and he's just like, he's not really doing anything. He's not bothered at all. He is just munching away. And then she's like, "Please, please untie me. I don't want to be here. I didn't mean to do anything." And he's like, "Yeah, okay." So he unties her. She gets up, and she's like being really, really slow. She's slowly walking towards the basement stairs, and she's like, "I'm just going to go now. I'm going to go home." And he just, like, he looks at her and he waves it, like, raises his hand and he just starts waving at her.
What?
So she gets, yeah, so she gets to the top of the basement stairs and then Otis opens the door, picks her up while she's screaming, carries her down the stairs and puts her in a cage. And so she's, like, screaming and crying because she almost escaped. He turns around to look at Tiny. Tiny stares at him for a minute, still eating his soup out of the dog bowl. And he just, like, shrugs his arms. He's like, what? What do you want? Well, this is my favourite bit. The best part about the whole scene is the fact that Tiny is wearing a shirt that says cheap-ass Halloween costume on it. That's me. That's literally me.
Oh, God.
So then the scene moves on. And... like, Denise, who was in the basement with Tiny, her father gets worried because she hasn't, like, called home yet and she hasn't arrived back. So he drives out to Ruggsville and he enlists the help of two police officers. One's the sheriff, his name's Wydell, and the officer is called Mash. So they get to Spalding's. It's ironic. So Spalding comes out in front of the police with... It's a t-shirt slanging off. Cops, basically. It says pigs is beautiful on it, and it's just a picture of a pig with, like, a sheriff's uniform on.
Right.
They have this whole thing where Spalding's being a little bitch, basically. He's, like, being sarcastic and acting stupid and stuff. But eventually he draws them the same map that he drew for the kids. Following the map, like, they, like, the sheriff and stuff, they end up finding the kids' car. It's all beaten up and stuff. When they unlock the boot, there's a murdered cheerleader in the back. Now, this is one of my favourite bits because in her, like, stomach, like, on her side and, like, down her thigh, she's got treat and trick carved into her. But the makeup, it just looks so real. I'm not sure how they... because it doesn't... usually you can tell with stuff like that. If you look at it too long, you can tell that it's makeup.
Yeah.
This was done perfectly. This is, like, some top-notch makeup and effects and stuff. It's just, it makes me uncomfortable looking at it too long because it looks too real. Like, they look like deep gashes in, like, the flesh, and I'm like, ugh.
Oh, my God.
The three, like, arrives at the Firefly property. So the Sheriff Wydell, he goes to the front door, and Denise's father and the deputy go around the back. This is another favourite bit because it's so casual. So Otis is sat in a room with Hugo, like the grandfather. The grandfather's, like, eating dinner, really disgustingly, might I add. And watching TV. And, like, Otis is, like, playing with his knife and stuff. So Mama Firefly comes in and she's like, oh my God, the cops are here, what are we gonna do? So Otis is like, he gives her a gun and he sends her out and he says, like, just get rid of them. And he turns around and, like, Hugo is, like, sat there still watching the TV. He is not bothered by this. And they end up bantering a little bit. And he, like, Otis points the knife at him and goes, don't start with me, Hugo! And I was like, it's just so casual. It's so, I don't know, for me it feels, like, so familial, just being dicks to each other. Basically, it moves to, like, the scene of the two cops around the back.
Uh-huh.
And they find one of the Firefly's dogs, it's chained up and it barks at them. They're not really bothered. So they move on trying to find something else. But the fucking deputy's, like, really shaken up by the dog. And he's like, I was bitten by a Cocker Spaniel when I was 8. And the other guy's like, okay, cool, I don't care. Like, and then it, like, they're moving around the back and he's like, it was a big Cocker Spaniel, and this guy's like, oh my God, shut the fuck up. And they're, like, find the barn and they manage to, like, pry it open with a crowbar, and all they see is Mary tied to the ceiling, still alive, but she's surrounded by all the dead cheerleaders. Like, there must be 8 or 9 bodies in here. Basically, Denise's father and the deputy, the way the scene makes it looks like they're losing their sanity just seeing all of this. So the deputy, like, yells into the walkie-talkie to the sheriff who's inside of Mama Firefly. Before he can do anything, she shoots him in the fucking neck. She's like, nah, bitch. You ain't going nowhere. This leads to one of my favourite moments in the movie is, so the deputy and Denise's father hear the shot and they think, oh shit, something's going on. They start to run. And Otis, he shoots Denise's father in the back a couple of times and he falls down dead. And then the deputy falls to his knees and all the noise stops. Like, you don't hear anything. And it, like, the camera, like, slowly backs up while Otis points his gun. And I think this has got to be a full, like, 45 seconds of silence and just, like, an outward shot. It's so long. Like, obviously, you're waiting for something to happen. You know something's going to happen. But it makes the scene even longer.
Yeah.
Because you're counting these seconds. And it's, like, so tense. And then the only thing you hear after that 45 seconds is the gunshot as, like, the deputy falls down dead. So literally my notes next to that say, what a scene.
Oh my God.
To celebrate, the family like they end up like splitting up to get ready for like the Halloween celebrations and stuff. So Baby and Rufus head to a store called Red Hot Pussy Liquors, as in like liquor, like booze.
Oh my God. I love that name.
Yeah, me too. That's probably the best bit for the movie. It's just the store clerk there, like, rings up all this stuff. And maybe like, so how much do we owe you, Goober? Because your name tag says Goober. And he's like, no. This says G-Ober. As in Jerry Ober, but the new guy Ron round the back added an extra O, so it says Goober. And we're just like, okay, cool, we don't care. And she's like, okay, well, how much do I owe you, Goober? And it like, oh my God, these guys spent like $170 on booze. But she's like, that ain't gonna break my bank, honey. Basically, what I've figured out is that the Fireflies are rich. So
yeah, definitely.
After that, Otis skins Denise's father, like his head and like most of his torso, and he starts to like, he puts it on basically. You don't see a lot of that though, you just see like a bit of blood and then you like see him putting the flesh on.
Yeah.
Rufus ends up driving around in Wydell's police cruiser with the sirens going and he's absolutely steaming drunk.
Jesus.
Everyone gets dressed up in like weird costumes and stuff, and Jerry, Mary, and Denise get dressed up in bunny costumes and then like hung together from like the ceilings. And then they make like this big ceremonial thing about it, and Otis comes down the stairs in like a cape and stuff, and he kind of looks like the Grim Reaper, if I'm honest. Oh no, you know what it does look like? Do you guys remember Horrible Histories?
Yeah.
Yes.
Do you remember the bit where you get to see Death? Like, the Death talent show, like, who had the stupidest death? Yeah.
Very vaguely.
He is dressed like the Grim Reaper. Like, face makeup and everything.
Jeez.
And basically, this bit's disgusting, because obviously he's wearing Denise's father's, like, skin.
Mm-hmm.
He goes up and, like, starts kissing Denise through the, like, the lip bit. She's like trying to get away and she sees it and she's like, daddy, and he's like, who's your daddy? And he pulls like the hood off and she starts screaming and I was like, what? They cut the kids down and they take them out further onto the property. Mary escapes and runs off, which to me is always fucking hilarious because she's got her hands tied and she's running off in a little bunny costume, and when you see the back shot all you see is this little fucking tail like jiggling slightly.
So, like, do you not see her for the rest of the film then?
I'm about to tell you what happened.
Oh shit!
You're like, oh my gosh, she's gone mad.
This bitch gone mad today.
Yeah, basically, Baby chases after her, and when she catches up to her, she is in a graveyard that the family have obviously been burying their victims in for years.
Oh no.
She just gets stabbed to death. Like, Baby does not give a fuck. She is, like, covered in blood. She is having a good time. And Mary is like, oh my God, I'm dying. And this bitch is laughing. Like, Baby's got some crazy laugh going on. Yeah. I never really pay much attention to that scene. It's not really as interesting as the rest of the movie, if I'm honest. Next bit is Denise and Jerry, who didn't manage to get away. They get put in a coffin and they get lowered into like an underground well like cavern. So there's like water on the bottom and stuff. The coffin is ripped open and like demonic like figures leap from the water and they grab Jerry and they pull him away. Now, the reason I think Rob Zombie hates this movie so much after he made it is because he was going down like a supernatural spiritual kind of path.
Yeah.
Because these guys, they're all, like I said, they're kind of demonic. To me, they seem like Wendigos, like cannibalistic creatures. I'm thinking that they might have been past victims left down there to starve.
Yeah.
And then when the flies put more victims down there, they ended up consuming the flesh.
Okay.
Because they're not like actual demons or whatever. They're just like really pale and skinny and all they want to do is eat. So I'm guessing like kind of like a Wendigo cannibalistic kind of situation.
Yeah.
More freaks show up and they pull off Denise's bunny costume, so she's just left in like the cheerleader outfit that Baby put on her ages ago. She wonders, I don't know why she does this. I would just chill for a little bit until I figured out what the fuck was going on. You know, this bitch decides she's gonna wander through the underground tunnel.
How she do? Let's go exploring.
She ends up finding like two sets of doors, so she opens them. And she's just surrounded by surgery patients.
Okay.
And she opens another door because she's like in shock. She's like fearless now. So she's going to walk through this room of weird people to open another door. And she sees Jerry. And he's like on like a surgical bed or whatever. And then we finally get to see Dr. Satan. He's like some kind of weird demon cyborg thing. He's operating on Jerry's exposed brain, which I'm guessing he's dead now, which he's been through a lot. He deserves it. Basically, she's not supposed to be there. So Dr. Satan's assistant, the professor, who is actually Mama Firefly's husband.
Oh, okay. Yes.
He appears and he attacks her with a huge axe and he chases her and he swings his axe. But he misses her and hits a support beam instead, which collapses the tunnel. Fun fact, the actor that plays the professor couldn't see properly in his costume. And the axe that he was holding was a real axe. So when
he swung
and almost hit her, he actually could have killed her.
Oh shit, I didn't know that.
I remember watching the DVD version and I watched the one with director's commentary. And yeah. Rob Zombie just like he says that and then he goes, well, we just assume she'd move out of the way.
Oh my god.
Hey, that's fine. Don't worry.
Oh
my
god.
Jeez.
I know, right? Basically that's pretty much the last thing we see until it goes back above ground and like dawn is just peeking. And all of a sudden a hand shoots up through the dirt in like typical zombie fashion. And Denise has basically managed to dig her way to the surface. This girl is fucking stubborn, okay? She's like, I ain't got that here. Not a bitch.
Not today.
Yeah, so she digs herself out of, like, whatever. And she starts, like, wondering. She doesn't look where she's going. She doesn't care. She is, like, fully in shock. She just does not give a shit.
Yeah.
Anyway, she reaches a road. And she's just stood there. And a red car pulls up and she doesn't even care if it hits her, so she's just stood there. But when it stops, she turns around. Lo and behold, it's Captain fucking Spaulding. He pulls up and he goes, sweet baby Jesus, what in the hell happened to you, girl? And she doesn't say a word. So she gets in the car and he's like, he drives off and whatever. So they're driving and he's like, wait, I recognise you. You're one of those missing kids. Whole lot of people looking for your ass, girl. And so you think, oh my god, she's going to get away. Everything's going to be fine. But no. He's like, don't you worry. I'll get you to a doctor. You just sit there and relax. So, and she's like, she like lets herself relax. And she's like, oh my god, I'm okay. I'm going to live. And then Otis sits up in the back seat and he is holding a knife and he stares at this bitch, and that it like kind of makes like a loud ending, and then you see nothing for a second. And then the final scene shows Denise back in Dr. Satan's underground laboratory being tortured. She screams, and boom, it's the end. Yeah, it's a very intense movie.
It's a good movie, though, to be fair.
Thank you.
Intense, but it's really good.
So, but yeah, the other two are better, because, like I said, Rob Zombie was trying to make something a little bit like Texas Chainsaw.
Yeah. Yeah.
Take it spiritual by having, like, the dead Dr. Satan underground, and, like... Yeah, whereas everything from that point on in, like, The Devil's Reject and Through From Hell, it's more realistic, it's more human.
Yeah. I do think you're right that, like, I reckon Alyssa would be okay with Devil's Rejects. Because it's a lot more lighthearted, isn't it? Like, compared to that.
Yeah, there's blood and stuff, but it's mostly from, like, stuff like gunshots and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not like the same as being like ripped apart by
there's no like
blunt objects.
I will leave you with some fun facts. So, this was filmed in the year 2000.
Okay.
However, it wasn't released until 2003.
Oh.
Yeah, it's because basically he originally filmed it with Universal.
Okay. Yeah,
They shelved it because they didn't want to get like an R rating, so they put it on the back burner. And I can't imagine how much that must have pissed him off. Like, can you imagine making a movie and then being told, yeah, we're not going to put it out because we don't want it to get an R rating, even though it's a horror movie?
Yeah,
man had to buy the rights to his own movie to sell it to somebody else. Yeah, so he eventually sold it to Lionsgate, and they obviously then put it out.
So, yeah.
Thank God. There's quite a lot of cut scenes that you only see in the extended edition that were filmed in Rob Zombie's basement after they originally finished filming.
Yeah. So
they look more like home movies, and they were filmed on Rob Zombie's cell phone.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Like, that's interesting.
Yeah, they look like real home movies, and it's actually really cool. So, what else? What else have I not already mentioned during my spiel? There's at least 40 minutes of cut footage.
Oh, wow.
Which I think sucks. This movie, though, is already like, I think it's like an hour and 25 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or like a 2-hour movie if you add on to the cutscenes. The actress that plays Baby, Sherry Moon Zombie, Alyssa won't know this, I don't think, but she's obviously Rob Zombie's wife. She's in pretty much all of his movies.
She looks amazing, like, for her age. I love her.
She's
gorgeous.
Yeah, if I could marry her, I would.
Yeah, I just love the way she, like, her character always is, like, I just love that character, I don't know why.
I don't know, she just plays it right, doesn't she?
Yeah, she really does.
Fun fact, B, that you probably don't know, she doesn't actually like horror movies.
Oh.
I think I read that in an article somewhere.
Yeah, she's not a horror movie fan.
Yeah, so, I'm sure I read that in an article somewhere.
It's a lot different when you're actually like in it and not
watching. Yeah.
So, that's fair. The house that she used as the Firefly house is the same house from the movie The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas. And at Universal Studios, they've got a tram ride where you can, like, go around that house. But when Rob Zombie was filming House of a Thousand Corpses, they actually refused to stop the tour and the tram ride. So all their filming was delayed and, like, it kept interrupted.
Yeah.
So, can you imagine how much that must suck? Spending all this time trying to fucking do a movie and it just keeps getting interrupted by fucking tourists.
And you're just like, and action, and then like it's just rolling. 30 seconds later, you're like, and to your left here, you will see.
You're like, are you serious?
I'd have lost my shit. He went through so much for this movie, only to end up hating it in the end. I feel really bad for him.
Well, Taryn, thank you for that.
You're very welcome.
This has been a long-ass episode, hasn't it?
I know, but it's worth it.
It is worth it.
To make
definitely true. Has anybody got any last notes?
Not that I can think of.
I would like to recommend a quick podcast for everybody.
Oh, go on then.
It's called Pod Cemetery.
Okay.
It's a guy and a girl. I think they're a couple. And basically they review like in-depth horror movies. So they always do double features, and it's either the same kind of subgenre of horror, or it's like a remake and an original.
Okay.
So like they did Pet Sematary the original, and then they did the Pet Sematary remake as a double feature in the episode. It's really cool, especially if you're into that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Because you get to hear their analysis of the original movie, and then you get to hear their analysis of the remake in the same episode.
That's good.
It's plus I just really like the name.
Yeah, the name sounds quite intriguing.
It's really intriguing though, and they're quite funny. They can like hold a conversation and keep your interest. It's really cool.
Okay. Well done, guys.
Did you say well done, guys, or well
done? I said well done, guys. Well done, guys. I'm so proud of you today. This has been a professional podcast.
You say this at the end of every episode.
Because I feel like I want people to know how professional we are.
So
you know, like when you watch Marks and Spencer's advert and they say that thing at the end. I feel like that's like Alyssa doing that. When she
this
says
has
that.
Been a Walmart ad. quick update as well on our graphics.
Yeah.
So we told you guys that we'd have them by this episode, and obviously that was like 2-3 weeks ago now. But there's been a change of plans. There were some issues. We've resolved them now. B's brother has actually volunteered as tribute. Yes. B's brother, wow. Nathan, has volunteered to do the graphic for us. We've seen bits of it so far.
This is probably as close as he's going to get to featuring on the podcast.
Yeah, because we've asked him to come on, he keeps saying no. Yeah, Nathan, if you listen to this, I'll fight you.
Them's fighting words.
So yeah, he's been giving us updates on the graphics, and they're looking really good so far.
What a man,
a good man. So yeah, hopefully we should have that soon and you guys will be able to see it, and it's gonna look great.
Super excited to see what the outcome's gonna be.
So
it looks really good so far.
Oh, it's gonna be great.
Exciting.
Well then, guys, we should end it here.
We should do. We should. Because we all need to eat food.
Assume.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Thank you guys for listening. All of our socials will be in the description.
Description.
So yeah. Goodbye, all.
Bye.
Can I get a wheel?
Bye.